Hit it.
All right. Welcome everyone to Armchair Experts. We are the team from Longreach offering unqualified opinions, interesting takes and passionate views on all things sport. Make sure you get out there and follow us on social media. On Twitter, it's at ArmchairEX, and the ever popular, ever growing Armchair Experts Facebook page. As always, we're brought to you by Nothing But League, one of the great rugby league websites. Watsy, I know you're a big fan of that, and how are you this afternoon, Watsy?
Very well, mate, and looking forward to the second half of the Armchair Experts season. We had a little bit of a break, and we're certainly back into the swing of things, and you keep raising the bar with these guests.
I'm glad you said guests then. The bar has been raised, and Max the Beard That's Feared, how are you, Max?
Good afternoon, how's it going?
Yeah, good. Now, the goal of the Armchair interview is to give struggling athletes like ourselves an insight into the life of successful sportsmen. You did say the bar has been raised. We have a very special guest. And not only was he popular on the field, but he's just as popular off it. So, born in Sydney, he would make his debut in the second row for the Sydney Roosters in 1997, and after featuring in only 24 NRL games, would be a surprise selection for the Anzac Test that year, and then was selected as a member of the winning Australian team for the 99 Tri Nations Tournament. He featured heavily in the 2000 Grand Final, where his Roosters would eventually go down 14-6 to the Broncos.
You had to put that in there, didn't you?
I did have to put that in there. But it wouldn't take long for the side to redeem this loss with a huge win over the Warriors in 2002, where our guest would star, even scoring the final try. His career would then move to Redfern, where he'd go on to captain the Rabbitohs and win the George Pickens Medal as the club's best and fairest. After retiring from the game in 2007, he would go on to become one of the most entertaining and enjoyable rugby league personalities through his work on Channel 9's The Footy Show and The Matty John Show. Make sure you get out and follow him on Instagram at Fletch Bry. We are joined by the rugby league legend, Brian Fletcher. Fletch, how's it going?
Great intro, boys. I feel 10 foot tall. I've never heard anything like that. Actually, so thank you very much.
Always check that Wikipedia, you know, the fact-checking.
I know. Sometimes they can change.
Well, it might get changed after the episode. We don't know. We haven't got Wikipedia pages. That's our goal with this. Now, Fletch, we're only a few days out from an absolutely dominating performance from New South Wales in the second origin and a pretty piss-poor one from Queensland. Did you see that result coming at all?
Look, it was astonishing. It was two different Queensland teams. I didn't think we would win in that manner or that fashion. Queensland didn't fire a shot, did they? Considering the second half up there in Brisbane turned that whole game around. Well, we were up to that game up there in Brisbane, but in the second half, their defence of the Queenslanders was outstanding. But you could tell by the kickoff on Sunday's game, when Safidi he got the ball and was over the 20-metre line. And I've never seen that Norwich, not on kickoff. I've never seen an Origin team make that many yards, so very unusual, but knowing Queensland, they'll come back bigger and better in Game 3.
Yeah, 100%. Now, Fletch, just to kick things off in your career, early days, mate, how did you discover the sport of rugby league?
Mate, I'm one of seven kids.
Whoops.
I forgot about I'm the youngest, so sometimes, you know, I forget about the older boys. But, I just followed in my brother's footsteps. So, grew up in Bondi, in the back streets of Bondi, and became captain for the Perth Colts. A lot of my brothers did. So, basically, as long as I can remember, I was in the backyard playing footy. Mum wouldn't let me play until I turned six, but I was ready to go by about three or four. So, it was just in me. We'd surf in summer and play footy in winter, but that was it.
There you go. Now, Fletch, my dream of becoming a professional athlete, and I don't want to talk about myself for too long, but it was shattered when I... oh, no. When a kid...
What's Max doing? What's the bearded bloke? Who's the bearded what?
The bearded Max. Beard, Max
is the bearded... What do you call him? The bearded what?
The bearded feared.
It's feared.
Oh, right, okay.
Like Mo and Ali.
Yeah, right.
But, mate, my professional career never started because I was there was a kid with a broken leg that got picked in under-12s comp, and it's a pretty sore point for me. But always fascinated. When did a professional career for you really become a reality?
Well, I made my debut. So I was graded, played Jersey Flea, which was like 17s at the time, and then in 1995, went to the Chooks. But it took me two and a half years before, one, because I was having a good time. Like if I wasn't getting paid, I was going to play park footy anyway. So I don't think training was high on my agenda. So during the week, because we didn't train 2 days a week back in those days because it wasn't full time. But game day, that's what we all strive for. Like, I just love getting up and field and playing. But Gus Gould was our coach in 95, so I played all 95 and all 96 on a two-year contract. And I wasn't going anywhere. I'd actually sort of basically given up, and I was thinking to myself, well, I'll go back and play park footy with my mates. Anyway, right at the end of the year, Gus said to me, mate, what are you going to do? You've got a choice here. Do you want to aim up or do you want to go back? So it was a bit of a talking to that I probably needed. And, yeah, then I started the trials in 97 and, in the off-season, and then went all right. And I realised you just have to... It's anything in life, you know. You can't put it in. You're not going to get any out of it. So I started, getting a diary about training, because we had the great Ronnie Palmer who said it helped him. You get a diary about your weight and, your diet and stuff. And so when it clicked and you realise that you could play better, you played longer minutes, and it just sort of evolved. So, but until you realise that putting the effort in at training, I was just a kid, but... that sort of opened my eyes up, and then 97, it all kicked off.
And as you said, 97 was your debut for the Sydney Roosters. What are your recollections of your first grade game?
I was super nervous, because I actually went down with Freddie. Now, Freddie was sponsored by BMW.
Yep.
So Freddie, in the nose day, Freddie, was a bit of a lad, a bit of a man about town. So we drove down in a convertible BMW. Such a wank. And, I was thinking I was pretty hot. Yeah, Freddie's driving there, and he had a bit of a mood in me. But it was raining, pouring down rain, and we played at Illawarra. And I was nervous in the dressing room, but I suppose the realisation that I thought to myself, I know all these folks that I play with, and I've been with the club for a long time, so that helped. But once you got hit, once I was okay, because they're bigger and stronger, the game's faster, because you hear about it, people trying to jump up from reserve grade to first grade. It is quicker, but I think it's actually easier playing in first grade, because the players around you are better, so you just got to concentrate on your own job, rather than when you're playing second grade, you're trying to do too much. So the nerves sort of dissipated pretty quick. When I got my first tackle in.
Yeah, obviously you've already touched on Gus Gould as your coach there at the Roosters when you first started. I know our thoughts up here as Queenslanders that we're probably not that big a fan of him, but he's arguably one of the greatest rugby league brains in the business. How did you find him as a coach there?
Yeah, smartest man, not only in rugby league, just in life, but he's a strange cat. Some days, you think you had a good game, right? So you come in on Monday and Gus wouldn't talk to you for the whole week. And you just go, what about that? But that was his go. It was mind games, just to make sure you weren't comfortable. And then other times, you've had a shocker and he just won't stop talking to you. So I don't know how his brain works, but the analysis that he can read blokes and the way he can communicate, he's super smart. Sometimes... he can give across a message, but he goes about it a really strange way.
Does he have a... I mean, he looks... just from the TV, he looks like he'd have an epic spray in him. Would that be a fair call?
What, mate?
Like an epic spray? Like, if you did something wrong, I could see him having a fair spray in him?
He'd give me some... I got a beauty like Brookvale over one in front of everyone. He pulled me off the field and just berated me on the sideline. And in front of everyone... It was funny because a bit of spit came out. The whole world just slowed down. I just saw this spit coming at me, and I thought, I know where this is going. I landed right on my lip.
And what do you do in that situation?
I was just hanging there, right? You're yelling at me. I'm going, do I wipe this? Because has he seen it? I know I've seen it. And it's sitting on my lip. I actually zoned out just thinking about this golly on my lip. Well, Gus was just, give it to me. You could hear it from the crowd. The crowd heard everything, because at Brookvale, it was close.
There you go.
Didn't work. I had a shotgun.
That's because you're too focused on your upper lip. Hey, Fletch, after only two seasons, 99 was probably the year you became noticed across the game, and you got selected for an Anzac test, and they said it was a bit of a surprise selection. Was it a surprise for you, and how do you find out about making that side?
Yeah, no, definitely a surprise. I heard about it in the papers. People had been saying that I might be selected, but I said I might be a chance coming off the bench, but as you said, I actually had a handful of games, and it's just to find out, and well, I did find out, was just Ray Hadley on 2GB, so I used to have to listen to the radio, and my number, it was the last number, so I went through all the 16, I was with my girlfriend, my wife, and we were at home, we're listening to it, and then I heard the name, my name come out, so yeah, it was a pretty special moment, for sure. But yeah, no social media, none of that. And back then, the papers, I mean, the journos weren't as loose. There wasn't as much leaking going on. So that's the way I found out. Then you get a phone call from your manager, your club manager, like our Brian Kennett. It was Bernie Gere at the time. He was our football manager. And I get down to Coogee Plaza and that night, and I had to go down and meet all, and it was like a team of, there was Alf, Lazo, Laurie,
jeez.
I knew Freddie, Jason Smith, Lockie wasn't in the side yet. It was just like those, you know, that year up. That test had sort of, year 99 was changing in the guard. So, it was all these big, you know, these old guys I had looked up to as a kid, and all of a sudden you got into them. So, pretty surreal.
Yeah, 100%. Now, on that same year, you got selected for Start of Origin. How different is the going into Australian camp to Origin camp? Obviously, you know, for a one-off test, the preparation isn't as much, but is there a big difference?
Well, it was, yeah, for New South Wales, because that first year I went was, it was Wayne Pearce's first year's coach, and that first game was the dry camp, the one out of Grant.
So. Oh.
Yeah, and because I've heard all the stories. Freddie, blokes in the play for New South Wales and Queensland talking about Origin. You know, you get the drink for 4 days; it's the best, and you know. And so I was pumped. But we get in there, and Wayne Pearce goes, "No, we're going horse riding." And then that was the infamous horse riding camp where Kearnsy broke his shoulder, and Robbie Kearns broke his shoulder, and Brad Clyde got knocked out, and Terry Hill fell off. It was just a disaster. So game two, yeah, we got in there on Monday and just drank piss for 3 days.
Yeah, so I mean, everyone always talks about those bonding sessions. Obviously, there is, you know, a lot of, you know, sinking of the tins with the fellas and that kind of thing. Are you a big believer of that? Does it really effort, like, you know, firm up the camp, get everyone on the same sort of level, get that culture in there?
Yeah, I think it does. I definitely think it does. It's like when you go into business, like in they have their long lunches in Sydney. Like they take clients out and they schmooze them, and you get to know blokes and you get to trust blokes. You know, sometimes on the drink, things come out that people, because you're all from different teams, obviously you play with each other. So if there's any arguments or there's any disharmony, usually settle it out, because you tend to say stuff on the drink you wouldn't normally say.
Was there anything aired out and sort of settled in there behind closed doors?
Nothing like that. I bet Kennedy sometimes gets crazy, but
and they say that's a problem with the Australian cricket team, that culture change there as well, going from the, you know, the poker playing beer days, having a punt on the horses, to like they're being moulded into just athletes now.
Well, I mean, yeah, it could be. I mean, they were taking the gambles over too, the wags. I mean, that would never ever happen in rugby league. I don't think it would, but. Yeah, it's all about that. But, I mean, you have to change with the times, and I'm a bit old school, and I enjoy going for a beer. But I think it sort of changed a bit when all the dramas went on.
Yeah,
in the NRL, you know, with the social, with the photos, the mobile phones.
Well, to a certain extent, players have become their own worst enemy, haven't they?
Well, they have, and the players now have gone back into their shell. So after having been in the media for like 5 years, you get to react with the players. There's no personalities, there's no characters, and they're all, you can see they want to do it, but they just think, oh, I don't want to give ammunition to the papers, or I don't want to give ammunition to, and then, like, there's no larrikins. Like James Maloney's probably the last of them.
Yeah.
And he comes from that old school, like he likes a beer and a punt. So I do feel a bit sorry for the players, but then I realise that they're all getting $700,000-$800,000 a year. So.
speaking of Origin in 2000, still remembered as one of New South Wales' most dominant series, culminating a 56-16 defeat of Queensland, giving a clean sweep. And I think the iconic moment was definitely the hand grenade celebration. I watched it this afternoon.
I watched it last night.
Now, it had to have been planned, surely.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was huge. It was a time when the footy show were doing all the post-try celebrations, so... We put it in the context. We had a look at that year. Canberra were doing their bowling one and catch a mile on the lawn. So it was big. And we had managed to go on to see a movie called Any Given Sunday, which was about Jamie Foxx, is in it. He's a quarterback.
Willie Beaman.
Willie Beaman. And so no one had seen this movie yet because we got the advanced screening. So they do it. They touch down, they do the hand grenade. So we thought, how good is this? So we get on the drink and did it at the nightclub, did it at the pub, did it back at the hotel. Right, it was everywhere, right? And then we only did that one day. This is the argument I have. So it was, we watched it that night, first night in camp, on the drink, get home, did it in the foyer about 4 a.m. Security came, we got in trouble. Didn't think about it again. Wasn't spoken about. I score the try, and Gerds goes, get a hand grenade. One girl that came running up and goes, what's a hand grenade? Yeah, a hand grenade. And then I went, oh, yeah. And it just clicked. And everyone just, reacted to it. So although we don't remember much of that Sunday night, we do remember the important bit was when I threw the bomb. They talk about it every year. It inspires Queensland. Well, you know what? Good. I like it. And I'm not ashamed to say that I did it, and the only problem is Queensland won 9 in a row.
Well, the hand grenade got off earlier when Queensland were down 56 points anyway, so if you get to that point, I think you can do whatever you want to them.
Gordon Cullis got sent off too. That was my other highlight of it.
But he still brings it up. Now, Fletch, that 2000 season, you ended up making the grand final against the Broncos. They were pretty unbackable favourites. I mean, they were a pretty hot side in 2000. You guys were as well. But do you remember the feeling leading up to that game, like the Roosters in camp? How confident were you? Like, was it a few nerves for your first grand final?
Well, we probably should have got there because we played Newcastle in the qualifying final the week before, and we were getting beat 16-2 at half time, and they had the gun side. Like, Joey was obviously at the peak of his powers. But 16-2 in a semi final, and Darren Albert scored a try in the corner with about a minute to go. And what we didn't realise, so we were behind the post, but he kissed the camera, So we get to the heart. It was Graham Murray's greatest ever coaching tactic. He goes, boys, 16-2. Look what these blokes have done. Look what they're doing to you. And he showed, he had like a, wasn't a laptop back then, in the 2000s, there was a, Commodore 64 probably. Gather around, boys, and have a look. He had to show a picture of Darren, or this video of Darren Albert kissing the camera. And, got us riled up. And came out, it was 22-18 or something. So, we put a lot of effort into that, and making that grand final, was such a great night, and it's the week leading up to it. We hadn't experienced it. Freddie was the only one to experience playing the grand final, so we weren't ready. And although we only got beat 14-6, I think it was, or 14-8, but we were never really in the contest, so we were just happy to be in that grand final, really, and enjoy the week, because the Roosters hadn't had a premiership since 75. Mm. Yeah, the whole area got behind it. So, we didn't really. We were just happy to be there.
We'll talk about winning grand finals soon, but what is the plan of attack after losing one? I imagine the alcohol content would be pretty much the same, but obviously the mood would be a lot different.
Like I said, we played our grand final the week before, so although we were disappointed we lost, we were up against that Brisbane side that we knew that was, they were full of internationals, and so we just enjoyed it for what it was. And I suppose
In the off season, we thought, well, you know, we need to get back to that because it was such a good feeling. And 2001 wasn't great. We sort of went out in the back door. And obviously, 2002 is when we kicked in. We got the cash.
And we're talking about 2002. It was a pretty fiery game, and the Warriors actually led early. I think Stacey Jones went over early in that second half. And after having the loss in 2000, does that doubt start to enter your mind, or is it just the belief always there in that particular game?
Yeah, I think our belief was there because we went on a run. We'd won about 10 in a row going into that, and we had been in behind in certain games leading into it. So maybe if we were the same side back in 2000... But that extra years, we had Craig Fitzgibbon, who was playing for New South Wales and Australia at the time. We had Craig Wing. We had, and Freddie was flying. And, we just sort of knew that it was a funny feeling. Going into that week, I knew we were going to win. I didn't think we were going to win so convincingly, but the turning point in that game was when Bill Sandy got Freddie late and it sort of fired everyone up. And after that happened, he kicked a 40-20 and we just went on for a roll. But, you know, to be brutally honest, I thought we were always going to win that game.
One of the highlights of that game was obviously when you had about three blokes to the outside and you powered your way over the line to score. Considering it was your final game as a Rooster, it must rank as one of your career highlights.
Yeah, it was. And also last try scorer, 28-1. that was good for all my friends and family, not me.
Of course not.
I know the Integrity Commission listened to this, so yeah, I'm not allowed to bet on it. But no, it was. I was going to the Bunnies the following year, so it was a pretty special time. And I think when you watch the video back, how the boys, they all came in, and it was pretty special.
Obviously, we talked about the mood of losing grand finals just before. I don't imagine any expenses would have been spared by the sounds of it then on celebrating this one.
Yeah, this is a beauty. we played on the Sunday. We had our presentation on the Tuesday, and then on Wednesday we're going on our trip away, which teams don't have trip aways now, which is diabolical.
We were talking to the Perth Wildcats, Nick Kay, and they put him out in a boat so they can't get into any trouble.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea. That's like the Dallas Cowboys used to have that place called the White House, where the owners, they'll get in trouble so much, the owners build a house in the middle of the desert for them, and they used to go out there and just do whatever they wanted, security around it. But we didn't do that. We went up to Nelly Beach in Townsville, and that was a good week in my life.
we've offered to host Mad Mondays or Silly Sunday at Longreach for any interested clubs.
Maybe New South Wales when they win the series 2-1.
Yeah, potentially. You'd see James White at the RSL, just call him Dress.
Would we get in trouble out there?
You'd be looked after, mate. There's no cameras in Longreach, they haven't arrived yet. So,
how far is Pine Gap from Longreach?
you got about 4 hours before it hits the press, so you'd be fine, mate. A good media manager can save careers in Longreach.
Good intelligence.
What's he's learned that the hard way.
I feel sorry for the young blokes now with the trips away. I mean, they do go on trips away, but something like three or four of them, and they grab their other mates who aren't learning. The old days of just the whole team going, that was, you used to look forward to, because if you're playing semi-finals, well, you weren't playing semi-final, you're out, so you're just counting down the rounds till the trip away. You had nothing else to look forward to.
Well, mate, you after that season, you moved on to the Rabbitohs for the 2013 season. Was it a hard decision moving on, and were there any other clubs that you might have gone to as opposed to the Rabbitohs, or was it a decision to stay in Sydney?
Yeah, it was a decision to stay in Sydney. Well, St George are pretty keen, and the Warriors were keen, but I was never going to go over there. But I'd actually played for South as a kid, so like I played, they're very similar, they're neighbouring, so I knew a lot of the people that were over there, and Souths had just got back into the comp the year before, so it was a bit of a rebuild, and they sort of sold it as that, and it was tough, I won't lie out, probably tougher than I thought, because we were basically going from the Roosters who, they had a lot of facilities, and they had a lot of staff that could help out, and then going to the Bunnies who were struggling financially at the time. This is before Russell had joined the club, so it was tough, but I learned a lot. Like, because I was the captain. I'd never been a captain. Well, I'd been captain of the Chooks once when there was about nine out. It was a tough year, but you know, that was probably my best year, I reckon, playing footy. I got to represent New South Wales in Australia from a team that I love. So it probably, personally, it was probably a year that I think I played some of my best footy there.
Yeah, and mate, despite finishing with a wooden spoon, there were some entertaining moments, and one that comes to mind, I'm a Broncos supporter, so there was a moment early on, I think it was round two or round three, you guys almost beat Brisbane, so there were some entertaining times in that little season.
Yeah, that was that one when Gordy stripped the ball, yeah. So I think we were leading 24, they make a break, and we tackled Darren Lockie, I think it might have been Ben Walker, one of the Walkers. No, it's Lockie. And Shane Walker actually tackled him underneath the post. There's 10 seconds to go, and we're underneath our post. The crowd, you know, was cheering because a South team hadn't been a Broncos team for 11 years, so we're going to win this. The front rower, Paul Stringer, is there, and he said to me, I'll never forget it, he goes, oh, I don't want to take it. I said, just go dummy half. 10 seconds to go. He goes, oh, okay. So he's run from dummy half, and Gordon stripped the ball out, and they score in the corner. And it was the most devastating feeling I've ever had. Because Wayne Bennett actually had come down from the stands at the Sydney Football Stadium and was in the tunnel. So when we walked off, right?
Yeah.
I was devastated. He didn't realise. So I was walking off and he goes, congratulations, mate, well done. And I thought he'd take the piss out of it. But he didn't realise that they scored and won, because by the time he came down, we were coming off. We were walking up the tunnel. So, yeah, that was... I do remember that. That was Gordon again.
So if he didn't know, that means... Would your coach have known... Because you had Langer. Paul Langmack at the time, didn't you?
Yeah. No, Langer didn't know either. Langer thought we were cheering. No, Langer thought we'd won. He was cheering...
He was planning a mid-season trip to Ely Beach.
Well, he was looking for an upgrade. Not just with the Broncos, but it wasn't to be.
And mate, after a stint at Wigan, you decided to hang up the boots. Was it a tough decision, or you just felt it was time?
Yeah, and I really enjoyed going over there. But my wife got a little bit homesick, so we had a 2-year deal. With an option for she just thought, although she had a good time, she said, oh, yeah, it might be time to come home. So, I was coming home, and Freddie was the coach at the Chooks, and he'd asked me would I go around again, but I just went, no, I don't think I could play up to the standard. So, I knew I was done, and it was hard, but you know, I had a good time, and it was time to get a real job.
Yeah, so you made a pretty successful transition once you finished playing footy to media. Was this something that you were always interested in during your playing days, or has it just come out of left field?
Yeah, came out of left field. I tell you what happened. Carrie Burns, who was the boss of Fox at the time, I'd been doing a little bit for the footy show, I was working for Sportsbet, you know, the corporate bookmaker mob.
Oh, we know them all right. We own half of it.
Yeah. So it was just a little bit here and there, not much, and... Then I got a phone call one day from Gary Burns, who was the head of sport at Fox. And he said, Flatch! And it was a message. Flatch, give me a call, Gary Burns. And, like, it was all noisy and shit. And I'd never met Burns before, so I rang him the next day. I said, oh, Gary, it's Brian Fletcher. And he goes, who? I said, oh, it's Fletch. You left a message on my phone. He goes, what? Did I? I don't remember. Come and see me Monday. So he honestly did not remember calling me. Someone had told him he'd be good. Like, Fletch might work okay doing some stuff with Fox. And then, it just started off. I didn't have any ambition to do it, but I was doing it on a Saturday. I was doing Saturday's Supers. What was it? Super Saturday with Sherbo. That was Fletch and Sherbo, just a weird game. Hindy was doing side by nine, he won side by nine, he's so bad at it that they said, right, you're never doing that again. And they put us together on Matty's show, and and off it went. So it wasn't, nothing was planned. It was just the planets aligning, I suppose.
And we talked about Fletch just then. You guys are easily one of Australia's most loved sporting duos. Were the two of you mates during your careers, and how did, you know, like that all, you know, you've told us how it came about, but do you guys, you know, you got on the field obviously when you were playing?
Yeah, we weren't like, we played together. We played together, but he's 3 or 4 years younger than me, and I suppose we got nothing in common. Like, he's from the west, I'm from the east. He's got 4 boys, I've got 3 girls. I surf, he hates the water. Like, he's a proper west, he loves his car. So I suppose that was the, you know, it's the yin and the yang, and I think that's what people like. But now we're mates, but definitely we weren't really close before. And we've just molded into this thing, you know. Like, it's all a bit of smoke and mirrors. Like, Hindy bungs it on sometimes, and I go over the top sometimes. But, it just seems to work, and then people like it.
You know, obviously with the Channel Fox League being created, there's definitely a need for rugby league personalities. Is there anyone that you played with that commentates now that you always knew would be a natural? I mean, Matty Johns is definitely an obvious one. He's had the gift of the gab for quite a long time.
Yeah. But
is there anyone else that just stood out? Because for me, Mick Ennis sort of surprised me. I didn't think that he'd be one to translate into media.
Well, no, there's heaps of guys that can do it. Like, there's heaps of guys. I mean, Cameron Smith is going to be able to do it, but I think what Matty brings, and I suppose Freddie to a degree, is they know their footy, but you need to have the light and the shade, you know. You got to have a little bit of humour with it, because sometimes I can't listen just to constant. There's so much footy.
Yeah.
There's so much footy on you got to have a little bit of, like, Vossi. I love listening to Vossi, because he knows his game, but he'll bring up something weird while he's commentating. But, Mick Innes is very good. Corey Parker's good. I don't know if there's anyone... You know, I'd say Freddie. I thought Freddie'd always, because he's a little bit strange. I like that. You need to have a little bit of something, another string to your bow. But, yeah, not really. Not many other guys that I've played with have gone under media, so there's not many positions available, so you've got to... Very lucky with the position we're in, but there's always more guys retiring. Like Cooper Cronk just walked straight into a media career.
Yep.
Mate, during your playing career, you played with a number of brilliant players at club, state, and national level, including Freddie and Andrew Johns and Darren Lockyer. Is there one that stands out, and maybe even one that people don't think of?
Mate, Jason Smith. I played Jason. He just continued to amaze me, and I played against him, obviously. Just like how tough he was, because he wasn't a big bloke, but he was tough in defence, and the way he used to ball play, because he used to mesmerise players. So, yeah, he wasn't the biggest and the strongest, but he just had that sleight of hand. I really enjoyed playing with him, but overall, yeah, Andrew Johns is the best player I've ever played with. Yeah, not by much. Freddie's a close second, but the things Joey could do were just phenomenal.
Yeah, there you go. Now, Fletch, you've been really generous with your time, but every guest we have on, we like to give them a bit of a top three, and you've kind of already alluded to before. We thought, you know, you're obviously our favourite rugby league personality, but who would be your top three? You mentioned Vossi. Is there another two? It could be past or present, just
top
a personality
three,
right. You love.
Hang on. Top three commentators or personalities?
Just personalities, mate. I suppose anyone that features in regards to the rugby league.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, Brett Finch.
Yeah.
I love the Finch man. Yeah, Vossi. And Freddie.
There you go.
Top three.
Yeah.
They're my top three. So, you know, they're a little bit something going on upstairs.
100%. Well, Fletch, mate, we can't thank you enough for joining us this afternoon and helping us out. And, mate, we wish you all the best with everything that you've got going on. And, mate, we'll talk to you soon.
Good on you, boys. Good luck with the show.
Yeah, cheers, mate. We appreciate it.
Cheers.